Kingmaker, Kingdom Come, written by Toby Clements and read by Jack Hawkins. Thomas Everingham and Jack Bradford saddle their horses in the light of a rush lamp, and they are already on the road to Gainsborough when grey dawn makes itself known in the leafless crowns of the elms to the east. Snow lingers on the ground among the trunks of the trees, and even though Thomas is wrapped in twice as many layers of linen and wool as there are evangelists, he still feels the ache of his old wounds. "You're getting on," Jack tells him. And Thomas supposes this is so. He must be nearly 30, he thinks, though he can't be sure. He pulls his rabbit fur-lined cloak about his shoulders and settles deeper in his fine saddle, and he takes some consolation from the warmth of his smooth, pacing palfrey. "My leg hurts a bit too, though, when it's like this," Jack admits, straightening it to look at it in the stirrup. "Where Catherine pulled that arrow out?" Thomas laughs because Jack makes it sound as if it's Catherine's fault his leg aches, rather than one of Lord Montague's archers who shot the arrow there in the first place, and he thinks of reminding him that Catherine did not so much pull the arrow out as hammer it through to the other side, and she did it with an old piss pot. Instead, he turns to the boy they've brought with them, a sort of servant, though you'd never say that to his face.
"What about you, John? You got any old scars to show us yet?"
John is about 15, Thomas supposes. His mother died in childbed, and his father has brought him up in rough and ready fashion ever since, and he's a wild-looking boy, with a foul mouth, and it is broadly agreed that it is a miracle he has not been hanged twice over, let alone not lost both ears to the clippers. The boy extends his muddy wrist from his muddy sleeve, and shows them a wall of puckered pink flesh only recently healed. Thomas and Jack suck their teeth sympathetically, though both have seen worse. "Hog tusk," the boy tells them proudly. "Bled like a Jesus Christ himself, begging your pardon, till Mistress Catherine put some of that salve on it, then it stopped." He tucks his wrist away proudly, as if it is something precious he did not want just anybody to see, and they ride on through a narrow defile in a dense wood of holly trees where birds cluster among the berries. Even their little bodies are steaming in the cold. Thomas wonders how much John Stumps must suffer in weather like this, with his arms cut so short just above the elbow. He hasn't complained of it yet, which is a surprise, for John Stumps takes much pleasure in complaint. He moans, Jack has told them, because he cannot sleep for any length of time before he is woken by pain in his arm where the imagined bracer on his left wrist is too tight and it pinches him, and there's nothing more he'd like to do than run a finger under it or loosen the strings, but he can't, for he has long since lost the wrist on which it is strapped. So it is not his fault that he grumbles so, but it makes his company heavy, and is one of the reasons Thomas did not ask him to come this morning. That, and the fact that it is hard for a man with no arms to ride a horse, even over these few short miles to Gainsborough, where they're riding this morning to see a lawyer named Mostyn. They could have made this journey any time, Thomas knows. They could have made it in the spring, perhaps, when the road might be busier and so presumed safer, but Thomas is anxious to buy back the last of Sir John Fakenham's land that the old man's stepsons sold to ease their debts, and Thomas wants to do this as soon as he can, because he has become gripped by the unvoiceable conviction that his fortunes reflect those of the country at large, so that when he has been down, as he has been, so has the country, and when he has been up, as he is now, then so is England herself. So now he believes if he can restore Sir John's estate to wholeness, then England will knit herself up, and peace and prosperity will return.